and welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related, and I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin. And we have a great hour for you. Our breaches of the week is off the rails. Everybody from Apple to President Trump has been affected or caused a data breach. And I'll get into that then as well. But that's going to be just a crazy long segment. Our deep dive, though, this week is on facial recognition and how it's going to get somebody killed. Because we have a lot of inherent problems with facial recognition systems, and they're being sold to law enforcement, and that is not a good thing. So we're going to dive into that, and I'd love to hear your feedback on that. But as always, we're going to start with the news. And in Department of Defense news, and I thought this was absolutely fascinating, because basically we are looking at something I think that is rather unprecedented for the Department of Defense, aka the Pentagon, and that is data storage. Now, if you don't know who Roma Laster is, you probably should. She's a Pentagon employee responsible for policing conflicts of interest between the Department of Defense and basically the private sector. Now, on August 8, 2017, she emailed an urgent warning to the chief of staff of then Secretary of Defense James Mattis. Several department employees had arranged for Jeff Bezos, he's the CEO of Amazon, to be sworn into an influential Pentagon advisory board, despite the fact that in the year since he had been nominated, Bezos had actually never completed the required background check to obtain security clearance. That's obviously a very huge thing for the Department of Defense. Mattis was about to fly to the West Coast, where he would personally swear in Bezos at Amazon's headquarters before moving on to meetings with executives from Google and Apple. But soon phone calls and emails began bouncing all over the Pentagon, and security clearances, since they're no trivial matter, basically, this put a kibosh on it. It stopped the issue, you know, because part of what we do when we have security clearances is that we are ensuring people that have access to information aren't, let's say, vulnerable to blackmail. They don't have conflicts of interests and all of that. Now, Laster contended that it was a noteworthy exception for Mattis, the actual Secretary of Defense, to perform the ceremony. Secretary of Defense usually don't hold swearing-in ceremonies, especially at the offices of Amazon. Now, the swearing-in was canceled, as I mentioned, and basically, despite the cancellation, Jeff Bezos did meet with Mattis that day. Amazon wanted the Department of Defense to basically abandon its current data center structure, which is essentially over 2,200 different data centers worldwide. It's kind of hodgepodge all over the place. And what they wanted to do was basically bring that in-house. They wanted basically Amazon to run the Department of Defense's computing. Now, this vision is now well underway to becoming a reality. The Pentagon is preparing to award a $10 billion 10-year contract in this move, and it looks like Amazon, their cloud unit, Amazon Web Services, is the biggest provider of cloud services in the country, probably the world, but they are the leader for this right now. They are the number one contender for this. Now, Bezos and Amazon are not the only ones, that are have this really cozy relationship, in this sense. Google is also the same way. Eric Schmidt, which basically is Google's chairman, he is the chairman of the defense board that Bezos sought to join. So what ended up happening to Laster was she was removed from the innovation board in November 2017, and I quote, "Roma was removed because she insisted on following the rules," said a former DOD official knowledgeable about her situation. Laster eventually filed a grievance, which was denied, and I quote, "Roma Laster, I've been betrayed by an organization I joined when I was 17 years old. This is an organization built on loyalty, dedication, patriotism. Unfortunately, it's kind of one way." Laster, who is now 54, still works at the Pentagon, and it's looking like the Pentagon is going to have all of its infrastructure hosted by Amazon, and I think that should throw up a whole bunch of red flags in the sense that Amazon is a massive data mining corporation like the other massive data mining corporations out there, but that is all of the Department of Defense's eggs in one basket. So I'm very curious to see what goes on with this. Amazon has a cozy relationship with other intelligence services in the United States. They have a $600 million data center for the CIA and some other stuff, but Amazon would absolutely love to host the world's data, and it's looking like the Pentagon is about to agree with them. So that is your Amazon / Pentagon / Silicon Valley news of the week. And in mobile phone / 5G news, a new study shows that cell phones are actually giving off way more radiation than what the FCC allows. And now with 5G being released, it could get even worse. And here's what's going on. So Apple and Samsung have released phones over the last 3 years that are actually producing more radio frequency radiation at levels higher than what the Federal Communication Commission or FCC allows. Now, the smart manufacturers are required to abide by the FCC guidelines in regards to radio frequency absorption by the body. Now, the current measure used to determine the safety limit is known as the specific absorption rate, or SAR. Now, the FCC basically sets this at 1.6 watts per kilogram averaged over 1 gram of tissue. The FCC states that this is a limit that's well below that which basically laboratory testing indicates could cause adverse health effects. But here's the thing. For a phone to receive approval, the FCC states that any device will never exceed the maximum SAR level. But the Chicago Tribune did a study, and a lot of models of phones do. And so what they did basically is they tested phones. The Chicago Tribune tested phones that were operating in both the 3G and 4G, not 5G, 3G and 4G bands that obviously they're everywhere right now. And some of these are exceeding the limit by as much as 5 times. Now, they tested 11 different models for iPhones, the iPhone 7, 8, 8 Plus, and iPhone X. 3 Samsung Galaxy models, the S8, S9, and J3, 3 Motorolas, the E5, E5 Play, and G6 Play, and the blue Vivo 5 Mini. Now, these phones were tested basically at an FCC-accredited laboratory, and the results show that, as an example, the iPhone 7 radio frequent absorption levels were among the worst offenders, with an SAR almost 2 to 4 times higher than the safety limit when tested 2 millimeters away from the body. The 3 Samsung Galaxy models also showed higher absorption at the same distance, and the Galaxy S8 topping out with a reading of 8.22 watts per kilogram. That is way above the 1.6. 5 times higher than the current standard. And what's interesting is that, I take this kind of personally in the sense that for the longest time, I actually used a Galaxy S8 Plus, which is the S8, just bigger. So that is all kinds of awesome. That's great, especially when I've got that thing in my pocket. I'm probably cooking my leg. The Tribune writes at the test, and I quote, was essentially a worst-case scenario in terms of radio frequency radiation absorption, with consumers hopefully not experiencing those levels seen during the testing. However, the lab owner, Jay Moulton, did say that this type of exposure could happen in limited situations, meaning you could be exposed, especially, let's say, you know, you're downloading or uploading something, and you guys know I do daily videos and audio on top of my radio show here. This would be one of those things that I might start uploading a video on my phone, and I'm obviously really cranking up the transmission of radio frequencies because I'm moving a huge amount of data. So it's something to consider, and we are looking at 5G, which may actually be turning up that radiation even further. So I'm curious to see where this goes, but we may either have an evolving standard or some of these phone makers may be brought to task for having too much radiation. But that is your mobile phone / 5G news of the week. You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And in Apple news, and if you've listened to this radio show or seen my daily videos or podcasts or anything like that, you know that, you know, I'm not a huge Apple fan. I think they make quality products. They've got a wonderful interface, just not for me. But one of the biggest problems I have is that Apple fans basically believe Apple's marketing, which says if you're running an Apple, there's no way you're going to get infected or anything like that. And here we are. Apple fans, don't believe the hype. You're just as vulnerable to infection as hacking like everybody else on the planet is. Now, here's what's going on. Basically, what was just uncovered was an unprecedented iPhone hacking operation, which attacked thousands of users a week And get this, for 2.5 years until it was disrupted in January. And basically, this was revealed by Google's research teams. It's called Project Zero. They are basically a cybersecurity research team out of Google, obviously a rivalry between Google and Apple on the cell phone side. But here's what's going on. Once hacked, everything was exposed in the iPhone to the attackers. Their location was uploaded every minute. Their device's keychain containing all their passwords was uploaded. Basically, chat histories on popular apps like WhatsApp, Telegram, iMessage, their address book, Gmail, everything. Basically, it was taken from you. The only way that you actually disrupted this virus or this infection was if you rebooted your phone. But because a lot of sites were infected, it was very possible to continuously reinfect the phone if you were turning your phone off or rebooting it on a regular basis. Now, what was happening is these hackers had found 14 different bugs or vulnerabilities within the iPhone, and then they were exploiting them, basically using what's called an exploit chain. Now, an exploit chain, if you don't know, that's a string of flaws that is basically linked together in such a way that a hacker can basically go from bug to bug, which gets them deeper and deeper access, making it more severe. Now, Google found this on February 1st and told Apple on February 1st, or rather they told Apple on February 1st, and Apple released an emergency update on February 7th. So if you are an Apple user, please update your mobile phone. If you haven't, if you're one of these people that says, like, skip, 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 this is why we hack, or excuse me, this is why we update, because you could be hacked. So please update your phone. And that is your Apple News of the Week. And in U.S.-China internet relations news, U.S. officials are looking to block an undersea cable backed by Google, Facebook, and a Chinese partner. This national security review has the ability to potentially rewrite the rules of how the U.S. and China connect via the internet to each other. Now, here's what's going on. The Justice Department is opposed to this $300 million venture due to concerns over the Chinese investor. That would be Dr. Peng Telecom and Media Group Company. This company has deep ties to the Beijing government, and there is fear that this LA to Hong Kong cable would give the Chinese government even more direct access into the United States data through eavesdropping on this cable. Now, here's the thing. Ships have already laid almost 8,000 miles of fiber cable on the sea floor, so most of the work is actually done. The work basically was done on a temporary permit that expires in September, and here we are, and it's looking like the U.S. Justice Department that oversees this, this is a panel called Team Telecom, will not renew or issue the permit. This would be the first time it has denied a permit based on national security and could signal that the U.S. government is adopting a tougher stance on Chinese projects in the U.S. Now, obviously, this comes with a backdrop of growing distrust between the U.S. and China. We're in the middle of a trade war. We have known Chinese hacking events and hacking attempts and other surveillance, on U.S. government entities and citizens coming out of China. So I think the fears are warranted and justified, but it's very interesting, especially since we are starting to see a bifurcation of the internet, an authoritarian closed internet that is run by China and basically the states that it is in or the countries that it has deep economic ties to, and a more free open internet for communication on the other side of the planet, United States, Europe, South America, et cetera, et cetera. So we're going to see where this goes, but this may just continue to put nails in the coffin on keeping the internet free, open, and connected for everybody. And I understand China's not doing that right now, but this is one of those things that may actually harm it in the long run, but the fear for national security is 100% justified. So we'll see where this goes, and I will let you know, but that is your U.S.-China relations internet news of the week. And in the war of misinformation or disinformation news, we may actually have a new weapon in this war that combats this, and that is mice. Now, I'm not necessarily talking about the click-click variety. I am talking about the squeak-squeak variety here, and I thought this was absolutely fascinating. Now, basically, when we are looking at this, we are looking at battling things like deep fakes, and I'll be going into this in the deep dive, but, you know, this is videos and audio, basically that can be, you can transplant somebody's voice or face into this and make them look like they're doing something that they obviously didn't do. And so this is what we're looking at combating. And the University of Oregon's Institute of Neuroscience is where one of the most outlandish ideas is being tested for this. Now, a research team is working on training mice to understand the irregularities within speech. This is something that a lot of animals can actually do with remarkable accuracy. We all know that dogs have phenomenal hearing and smell. Mice apparently are the same way, at least with the ears, and, you know, mice have ears. Just look at Mickey. So it is hoped that eventually this research could be used to help sites like Facebook, YouTube, etc., detect deepfake technology before it's able to spread online. Now, to be clear, the researchers are not saying that, you know, basically Facebook or YouTube or whoever has to buy an army of mice. That's not what they're doing. What they're trying to do is get that integrated into an artificial intelligence, but they're training this mice to understand a small set of phonemes. Basically, these are the sounds that distinguish one word from another. And I quote one of the researchers here, "We've taught the mice to tell the difference between a b and a g sound across a bunch of different contexts surrounded by different vowels, so they know bow and buy and be, all these different fancy things that we take for granted. And because they can learn this really complex problem of categorizing speech sounds, we think that it should be possible to train the mice to detect fake and real speech." Now, the mice were given a reward each time they correctly identified something, and their accuracy rate right now is around 80%. So they're doing actually pretty good with all of this, and it's not perfect, but it could be coupled with existing detection technologies as well, and then input into an artificial intelligence. And I quote Jonathan Sanders, who is one of the project researchers, "While I think the idea of a room full of mice in real time detecting fake audio on YouTube is really adorable, I don't think that is practical for obvious reasons. The goal is to take the lessons we learned from them and the way that they do it, and implement that into a computer. And so we might be using mice to detect deepfake audio and deepfake video, and I think that is absolutely fascinating." And so that is your War on Misinformation news of the week. And now for breaches of the week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you, or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me, and I'm glad to give you a shout out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can email questions@securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions@securityfanatics.com. And I'm more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout out on the air. With that, let's begin. And strap yourselves in, because this week's breaches of the weeks are, it's absolutely insane. Obviously, we've been off for a few weeks or so, and so we are catching up with about 2 to 3 weeks worth of data breaches here, but we're going to dive right in. And before I do that, I'd like to give a shout out to Chris Fallon, Neville Goodles, Rebecca Rutherford, and Tamara Groff. Guys, thank you so much for giving me and sending me a lot of this information. It always helps. You know, if you have a tip, I know I mentioned that in the preamble, please send it in. I'm always a fan of hearing from people, questions and tips and all this kind of stuff. But let's get going, because we have no time to lose this week. And we are going to start in the United Kingdom with a product called BioStar 2 by a company called Suprema. Now, this is a biometrics lock system that allows centralized control for access to secure facilities like warehouses or office buildings. Its primary clients are entities like the UK's Metropolitan Police, defense contractors, banks, etc. And you know where I'm going with this, the fingerprints of over 1 million people, as well as facial recognition information, unencrypted usernames and passwords, and personal information of employees were discovered on a publicly accessible database. So they are obviously downplaying the severity of this, but holy crap. So if you have anything to do with BioStar 2 and Suprema, for those of you listening in the UK, heads up. Moving on back into the United States for the most part, although this is an international organization, we are talking about Choice Hotels. They own Econo Lodge, Comfort Inn, and Quality Inn. They've said about 700,000 guest records were exposed after one of its vendors copied data from its systems. Criminals then discovered the unsecured database and tried to hold the hotel chain ransom, which it ignored. So they found 3.8 gigabytes in a MongoDB database containing 5.7 million records, which didn't require any authorization to access. So heads up. If you stayed at a Choice Hotel, odds are you may have a bit of an issue there. The next one we're going to be talking about is Credit Karma. Now, basically, this is interesting. A user complained, and I quote, "First time logging in, it gave me my information, but as soon as I refreshed the screen, it gave me somebody else's info." That is according to one user on Reddit. I continue, refreshed again, and bam, somebody else's info. It's like roulette. Now, Credit Karma spokesperson Ellie Donahue denied that there was a data breach, but when asked, would not say how many customers were affected. And I quote Credit Karma, "What our members experienced this morning was a technical malfunction that has now been fixed. There is no evidence of a data breach." And so that is their official statement. Moving on, European Central Bank. Basically, they shut down one of their websites about 3 weeks ago, Thursday, after it was hacked and infected with malicious software. Now, the European Central Bank said no market-sensitive data had been compromised during this attack on its quote-unquote Banks Integrated Reporting Directory, or BIRD, which it uses to provide bankers with information on how to produce statistical and supervisory reports. It added that malware had been injected onto the server hosting the site, basically adding that to the email adding that to email addresses, names, titles, subscribers of BIRD newsletter, the newsletter and all of that. And so this attack dated back to December of 2018, and they have since cleaned it up. So if you receive the BIRD from European Central Bank, heads up to you. Moving on, we're talking about a company called Credia.ge. This is out of the country of Georgia. Now, this is interesting. Basically, they had an Elasticsearch misconfiguration, and 2 gigabytes of Elasticsearch data in question was already labeled as compromised in a Shodan search containing 142,571 user records. And so if you had Credia.ge or using that out of the country, not the state of Georgia, your full username, full name, full address, birthday, passport number, email, loan amount, tax ID code, IBAN bank number, Unicard ID, and loan status have all been dumped onto the dark web. So heads up to you. Moving on, we're going to be talking about a supermarket chain in the United States called Hy-Vee. Credit card payment information of some of its customers has been exposed in a recent data breach. The exact amount of customers and locations had not been disclosed when I did my research on this. And basically, they have 245 stores overall, based out of they're based out of West Des Moines, Iowa. And they said it's a security incident involving their payment processing system at its fuel pumps, drive-through coffee shops, and restaurants. Now, these restaurants include its Market Grill, Market Grill Express, and company-owned Wahlburger locations, basically operating at their store. So heads up, if you've eaten there or gone to their gas station at Hy-Vee, you might have been hit. Moving on, we're going to be talking about Delta Airlines, and this is also an interesting one. They are suing a company called 247.ai for not securing their chatbots properly. Now, this is a chatbot that Delta was using on their website. So in other words, if you went to Delta's website and you chatted with somebody, you were chatting with a 247.ai chatbot from this company, and basically Delta is accusing them of waiting more than 5 months to inform the airline that 247.ai had a data breach that directly affected Delta. So we'll see where that goes. Moving on, we are talking about a company called Luscious. I believe this is an adult dating website, if I'm remembering correctly. I don't have it in front of my notes, which is odd, but I usually identify these things. So Luscious, which I think it's an adult dating website, exposed the private information of 1.195 million of the site's users. This leaked information included usernames, personal email accounts, locations, gender, activity logs, and in some cases, full names. Many users joined Luscious using their government email addresses, and evidence of this is basically came from users in Brazil, Italy, Australia, and Malaysia. So basically, if you're using Luscious as a dating website of whatever kind that it is, and I'm guessing it's of the adult nature, heads up to you, your data's probably hanging out there in the wind. Moving on, we're talking about MasterCard, but specifically MasterCard in Europe. Their European unit formally notified Belgium and German data protection regulators of a data lapse concerning their loyalty program. Now, this is what officials said about 2 weeks ago on Friday. The Belgium watchdog said in a statement on Friday that the card company alerted them to a breach on August 19th, and it said the episode would have affected a large number of people, and a significant portion of them would have been German. So if you are in Germany or German and you are using a MasterCard, heads up to you. Moving on, we're going to be talking about MoviePass. I know that's here in the United States. I'm not sure if it's around the globe. Basically, this is like a monthly subscription to get you into movies. They exposed tens of thousands of customer card numbers and personal credit cards because a critical server was not protected with a password. Way to go, guys. The database was massive, containing 161 million records at the time, and it was continuing to grow in real time. Now, many of these records were normal computer-generated logging messages, but many of them also included sensitive user information, such as MoviePass customer card numbers. So if you have MoviePass, heads up, your data was out there. Moving on, we're talking about Cable One, the internet service provider. In May of 2019, Cable One learned that an unauthorized individual through a third-party vendor obtained access to approximately 14 Cable One employee email accounts, obviously phishing. And so their emails contained personal information about some of their current employees. And so we're talking about names of people, dependents, beneficiaries, addresses, social security numbers, government-issued IDs, financial account numbers, digital signatures, medical and or health insurance information. So if you worked for Cable One, heads up. Moving on, we're going to be talking, or rather going to Australia. Now, banks in Australia have started warning customers of a fresh data breach involving the PayID records that was reported to the new payments platform overseer NPP Australia, which is a governing body. Now, NPP said that an undisclosed number of PayID records and quote, and associated data in the addressing service were exposed by a vulnerability in one of the financial institutions sponsored into the NPP by Kuskal Limited. Kuskal has confirmed that the client-side technical issues underlying the exposure were identified and resolved immediately. So Kuskal apparently is a supplier for PayID and banks, and it looks like they got hit. So heads up to you if you're down under. Moving on, we are heading to Focus Brands. Focus Brands owns restaurants like Moe's Southwest Grill, Schlotsky's, and McAllister's Delis. Unauthorized payment processing, there you go, on their three chains. Now, they also own things like Auntie Annie's, Carvel, Cinnabon, and Jamba Juice, but they say that those chains were not affected by this data breach. So heads up, if you've eaten at Moe's, Southwest Grill, Schlotsky's, or McAllister's, you may have a credit card breach. And stay tuned to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show as we take a quick break for a public service announcement. We'll be back right after that.